Chapter 52. Vinicius, on leaving the apostle, went to the prison with a heart renewed by hope. Somewhere in the depth of his soul, despair and terror were still crying, but he stifled those voices. It seemed to him impossible that the intercession of the vicegerent of God, and the power of his prayer, should be without effect. He feared to hope. He feared to doubt. I will believe in his mercy, said he to himself, even though I saw her in the jaws of a lion. And at this thought, even though the soul quivered in him, and cold sweat drenched his temples, he believed. Every throb of his heart was a prayer then. He began to understand that faith would move mountains, for he felt in himself a wonderful strength, which he had not felt earlier. It seemed to him that he could do things which he had not the power to do the day before. At moments he had an impression that the danger had passed. If despair was heard groaning again in his soul, he recalled that night, and that holy gray face raised to heaven in prayer. No, Christ will not refuse his first disciple, and the pastor of his flock. Christ will not refuse him. I will not doubt. And he ran toward the prison as a herald of good news. But there an unexpected thing awaited him. All the Praetorian guards taking turn before the Mamertan prison knew him, and generally they raised not the least difficulty. This time, however, the line did not open, but a centurion approached him and said, Pardon, noble tribune, today we have a command to admit no one. A command? Repeated Vinicius, growing pale. The soldier looked at him with pity, and answered, Yes, Lord, a command of Caesar. In the prison there are many sick, and perhaps it is feared that visitors might spread infection through the city. But hast thou said that the order was for today only? The guards change at noon. Vinicius was silent, and uncovered his head, for it seemed to him that the palleolus which he wore was of lead. Meanwhile the soldier approached him, and said in a low voice, Be at rest, Lord, the guard and Ursus are watching over her. When he had said this, he bent, and, in the twinkle of an eye, drew with his long Gallic sword on the flagstone the form of a fish. Vinicius looked at him quickly. And thou art a Praetorian? Ill I shall be there, answered the soldier, pointing to the prison. And I too worship Christ. May his name be praised. I know, Lord, I cannot admit thee to the prison, but write a letter, I will give it to the guard. Thanks to thee, brother. He pressed the soldier's hand, and went away. The palleolus ceased to weigh like lead. The morning sun rose over the walls of the prison, and with its brightness consolation began to enter his heart again. That Christian soldier was for him a new witness of the power of Christ. After a while he halted, and, fixing his glance on the rosy clouds above the capital and the temple of Jupiter Stator, he said, I have not seen her today, O Lord, but I believe in thy mercy. At the house he found Petronius, who, making day out of night as usual, had returned not long before. He had succeeded, however, in taking his bath and anointing himself for sleep. I have news for thee, said he. Today I was with Tullius Senecia, whom Caesar also visited. I know not whence it came to the mind of the Augusta, to bring little Rufius with her, perhaps to soften the heart of Caesar by his beauty. Unfortunately, the child, wearied by drowsiness, fell asleep during the reading, as Vespasian did once. Seeing this, Ahenobarbus hurled a goblet at his stepson, and wounded him seriously. Poppaea fainted. All heard how Caesar said, I have enough of this brood. ... And that, knowest thou, means as much as death. The punishment of God was hanging over the Augusta, answered Vinicius. But why dost thou tell me this? I tell thee, because the anger of Poppaea pursued thee and Lygia, occupied now by her own misfortune, she may leave her vengeance, and be more easily influenced. I will see her this evening and talk with her. Thanks to thee. Thou givest me good news. But do thou bathe and rest. Thy lips are blue, and there is not a shadow of thee left. Is not the time of the first ludus matutinus is announced? Inquired Vinicius. and 10 days. But they will take other prisons first. The more time that remains to us, the better. All is not lost yet. But he did not believe this, for he knew perfectly that, since to the request of Alicerus, Caesar had found the splendidly sounding answer in which he compared himself to Brutus, there was no rescue for Lygia. He hid also, through pity, what he had heard at Senecia's, that Caesar and Tigellinus had decided to select for themselves and their friends the most beautiful Christian maidens, and defile them before the torture. The others were to be given, on the day of the games, to praetorians and beast-keepers. Knowing that Vinicius would not survive Lygia in any case, he strengthened hope in his heart designedly, first, through sympathy for him, and second, because he wished that, if Vinicius had to die, he should die beautiful, not with a face deformed and black from pain and watching. "Today I will speak more or less thus to Augusta," said he. "Save Lygia for Vinicius, I will save Rufus for thee. ... and I will think of that seriously. One word spoken to Ahenobarbus at the right moment may save, or ruin anyone. In the worst case, we will die in time." "Thanks to thee," repeated Vinicius. "Thou wilt thank me best, if thou eat and sleep. By Athene, in the greatest straits Odysseus had sleep and food in mind. Thou hast spent the whole night in prison, of course?" "No," answered Vinicius. "I wish to visit the prison today, but there is an order to admit no one. Learn, O Petronius, if the order is for today alone, or till the day of the games. I will discover this evening, and tomorrow morning will tell thee for what time, and why the order was issued. But now, even were Helios to go to Cimmerian regions from sorrow, I shall sleep, and do thou follow my example." They separated. But Vinicius went to the library, and wrote a letter to Lygia. When he had finished, he took it himself to the Christian centurion, who carried it at once to the prison. After a while he returned with a greeting from Lygia, and promised to deliver her answer that day. Vinicius did not wish to return home, but sat on a stone and waited for Lygia's letter. The sun had risen high in the heavens, and crowds of people flowed in, as usual, through the Clivus Argentarius to the forum. Hucksters called out their wares, soothsayers offered their services to passers-by, citizens walked with deliberate steps toward the rostra, to hear orators of the day, or tell the latest news to one another. As the heat increased, crowds of idlers betook themselves to the porticos of the temples, from under which flew from moment to moment, with great rustle of wings, flocks of doves, whose white feathers glistened in the sunlight, and in the blue of the sky. From excess of light and the influence of bustle, heat, and great weariness, the eyes of Vinicius began to close. The monotonous calls of boys playing mora, and the measured tread of soldiers, lulled him to sleep. He raised his head still a number of times, and took in the prison with his eyes. Then he leaned against a stone, sighed like a child drowsy after long weeping, and dropped asleep. Soon dreams came. It seemed to him that he was carrying Lygia in his arms at night through a strange vineyard. Before him was Pomponia Gracina lighting the way with a lamp. A voice, as it were of Petronius, called from afar to him, "Turn back," but he did not mind the call, and followed Pomponia till they reached a cottage. At the threshold of the cottage stood Peter. He showed Peter Lygia, and said, "We are coming from the arena, Lord, but we cannot wake her. Wake her thou. See, Christ himself will come to wake her," answered the apostle. Then the pictures began to change. Through the dream he saw Nero, and Poppaea holding in her arms little Rufus with bleeding head, which Petronius was washing, and he saw Tigellinus sprinkling ashes on tables covered with costly dishes, and Vitellius devouring those dishes, while a multitude of other Augustans were sitting at the feast. He himself was resting near Lygia, but between the tables walked lions from out whose yellow manes trickled blood. Lygia begged him to take her away, but so terrible a weakness had seized him, that he could not even move. Then still greater disorder involved his visions, and finally all fell into perfect darkness. He was roused from deep sleep at last by the heat of the sun, and shouts given forth right there around the place where he was sitting. Vinicius rubbed his eyes. The street was swarming with people, but two runners, wearing yellow tunics, pushed aside the throng with long staffs, crying and making room for a splendid litter which was carried by four stalwart Egyptian slaves. In the litter sat a man in white robes, whose face was not easily seen, for he held close to his eyes a roll of papyrus, and was reading something diligently. "Make way for the noble Angustian," cried the runners. But the street was so crowded that the litter had to wait a while. The Augustan put down his roll of papyrus and bent his head, crying, "Push aside those wretches. Make haste." Seeing Vinicius suddenly, he drew back his head and raised the papyrus quickly. Vinicius drew his hand across his forehead, thinking that he was dreaming yet. In the litter was sitting Chio. Meanwhile, the runners had opened the way, and the Egyptians were ready to move, when the young tribune, who in one moment understood many things which till then had been incomprehensible, approached the litter. "A greeting to thee, O Chio," said he. "Young man," answered the Greek, with pride and importance, endeavoring to give his face an expression of calmness which was not in his soul, "be greeted, but detain me not, for I am hastening to my friend, the noble Tigellinus." Vinicius, grasping the edge of the litter, and looking him straight in the eyes, said with a lowered voice, "Didst thou betray Lydia?" "Colossus of Memnon," cried Chio, with fear. But there was no threat in the eyes of Vinicius. Hence the old Greek's alarm vanished quickly. He remembered that he was under the protection of Tigellinus, and of Caesar himself, that is, of a power before which everything trembled, that he was surrounded by sturdy slaves, and that Vinicius stood before him unarmed, with an emaciated face and body bent by suffering. At this thought his insolence returned to him. He fixed on Vinicius his eyes, which were surrounded by red lids, and whispered in answer, "But thou, when I was dying of hunger, didst give command to flog me." For a moment both were silent, then the dull voice of Vinicius was heard, "I wronged thee, Chio." The Greek raised his head, and, snapping his fingers which in Rome was a mark of slight and contempt, said so loudly that all could hear him, "Friend, if thou hast a petition to present, come to my house on the Esquiline in the morning hour, when I receive guests and clients after my bath." And he waved his hand. At that sign the Egyptians raised the litter, and the slaves, dressed in yellow tunics, began to cry as they brandished their staffs, "Make way for the litter of the noble Chilochionites! Make way, make way!" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.